Well, quite an entry, huh? Wasn't that impressive? Well, the story is that a guy who was almost 75 years old was playing soccer with his French grandkids and fell and injured himself. That's the story. And when I was with my French grandkids, they wanted to do two things: play soccer and have me read to them. So after I injured myself, I mostly did reading. But I had a lot of fun soccer before I injured myself. That's the story. But they wanted me to, my younger grandson, Logan, wanted me to read him only Captain Underpants. He has 16 volumes. And I read 6 volumes. Pretty good, huh? And I think he's going to bring the other 10 here to Minneapolis when he comes here in July. But it made me think about my childhood stories that I happen to think were more beautiful than Captain Underpants, like Wizard of Oz. And my grandsons had never heard of Wizard of Oz and were not interested. So I thought, well, I'm going to write a talk about Wizard of Oz, even if they're not interested. So that's what I'm talking about, Wizard of Oz. My father read me Wizard of Oz when I was 4 years old and I was sick in bed. And it made me not want to get better. Because I got my dad's attention. And this is, you know, that's a cool story. Okay, so Wizard of Oz. Starts out with black and white Kansas bleakness. No parents, a mean old neighbor who tries to take Toto the dog. And here's Frank Baum. When Dorothy stood in the doorway and looked around, she could see nothing but the gray, great gray prairie on every side. The sun had baked the plowed land into a gray mass with little cracks running through it. Even the grass was not green, for the sun had burned the tops of the long blades until they were the same gray color to be seen everywhere. Once the house had been painted, but the sun blistered the paint and the rains washed away, and now the house was so dull and gray as everything. So, I don't know about you, but most of us who get into meditation practice get into it at a time when we're feeling kind of gray, when we're feeling kind of down or kind of anxious or everything seems kind of washed out, and that's because we don't come from a meditation culture. It wasn't in our families, so what's going to bring us here in the first place? But some sense of things not being okay, and so there's Dorothy. There's Dorothy in her black and white world. And so, what's the first thing that happens? First thing that happens is this cyclone, this tornado comes, and Dorothy has her dog, and she gets swooped up into the tornado, and then she gets deposited in a world which isn't black and white, which is technicolor. And she inadvertently kills the Wicked Witch of the East. And her house falls on the Wicked Witch of the East, right? And in the movie, the Wicked Witch's ruby slippers are there. In the book, it's the silver shoes. So then a beautiful shining power appears, Glinda the Good. Glinda the Good Witch, and she tells Dorothy to return home. She should put on those silver shoes, and she says, "Never let them off your feet for a moment, and you'll be able to return home." So, the promise of from meditation practice, the promise of Zen, is that we can find our true home. We can return home. through our practice. Now, what's our practice? Is our practice silver shoes? Well, our silver shoes are those black cushions there. They may not look quite as wonderful as the silver shoes, but actually they're pretty wonderful. They're pretty wonderful. So when I met my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, he seemed like kind of a shining power to me. Maybe that was just my projection. But he seemed like a shining power. I didn't know. He just seemed to kind of glow and seemed wonderful. And but he didn't give me shoes. He gave me one of those black cushions. I told him about a really deep, wonderful experience I had. He said, "Oh, that's fine, but that's not Zen. Here, come sit on one of these things." Only he didn't call them things. Sit on a zafu. Sit on a zafu. And then he said, "Furthermore, just," and I said, "Oh, that's simple. I can just sit down now." And he said, "Yes, but come here every morning and sit with me." So he was giving me the shoes and telling me to keep them on. To every day get my butt on the cushion. Get my butt on the cushion. So then she asked Glinda, will Glinda take her home? Will she get her home? And Glinda says, "No, I cannot do that, but I will give you my kiss. And no one will dare injure a person who has been kissed by the Wicked Witch of the North." Then she came close to Dorothy and kissed her gently on the forehead. When her lips touched the girl, they left a round, shining mark, as Dorothy found out soon after. So from that point, no harm can come to her. She doesn't know it, but she's protected by the power of good. Pretty wonderful, the power of good. So our teachers, my teachers, and me as a teacher, we can't take you to your own home here of stillness. You have to do it yourself. You have to do it yourself. But we can kiss you. We can kiss you. And we don't actually ever have to physically kiss you, because my teacher never touched me. He kissed my soul. But of course there's no soul in Buddhism. So maybe he kissed my no soul. I don't know. He kissed me. And he's still kissing me 53 years later. And is that mystical? Maybe so. I don't know. Is that made up? I don't know. But that power of good has supported me all these years. I'm doing this because of the sun coming in. That's okay. That's okay. So we're kissed. We're kissed. The invisible lip marks of the good witch and her shining power. And this is our lineage in Zen. This kiss is passed on from generation to generation. We don't know. We don't know, but we feel it. We feel it. And it protects us. It protects us. Even when we're dead. So then the Glinda says to Dorothy, "Don't be tricked into giving your silver shoes away. Don't be tricked into giving your silver shoes away." So when I was with my teacher, another teacher was telling me that if I practiced with him, I could have great enlightenment. Only was more subtle than that. But not too subtle. I got the message that I wouldn't have to endure. I wouldn't have to endure sitting facing a wall, sitting facing a wall, sitting facing a wall for kalpas for a long, long, long time. That he had the quick and easy way. And I don't know if Suzuki was listening. I didn't think Suzuki was in the building when he said this, but next day when I saw Suzuki, he said, "You have a great treasure in you. Don't let anyone take it from you. Someone may try to take it from you. So you have a great treasure within you. Right here, you have a great treasure. Don't let anybody take it from you. It's here. It's here." So then, Glinda the Good sends Dorothy down the yellow brick road to find the wizard. Oh boy, that is bright to get home. So this is our practice, our meditation practice, to get home, to return to non-contingent happiness, which is at the center of all being. Not contingent on circumstances. Not contingent on whether we're feeling good or feeling bad. Or non-contingent. So then as Dorothy leaves for the Emerald City, the Good Witch tells her, it's a long journey through a country that is sometimes pleasant and sometimes dark and terrible. Any of you who are sitters know that sometimes your sitting is dark and terrible. But sometimes it is pleasant. And you can be with that. You have the strength to be with that. There's no formula. There's no formula in Dorothy's path on the yellow brick road. Sometimes she feels like she's on the wrong road. Yeah, sometimes we feel like we're on the wrong road. Just a black cushion, a sitting facing wall. Jeez. So, one of my favorite stanzas from a poem by Garcia Lorca. To take the wrong road is to come to the snow. To come to the snow is to get down on your hands and knees for 20 centuries and eat the snow of the cemeteries. That might sound negative to you, but actually it's very, very positive and very wonderful to let go of the small self and get down on your hands and knees for 20 centuries, for 80 centuries, and eat the snow of the cemeteries. That means to disjoin with life and death, to not be caught by one or the other, just to join, just to give yourself to it. So then she has her three buddies that she meets, right? She meets her three buddies. The Cowardly Lion, the Scarecrow, and the Tin Woodman. And we can say those three buddies are aspects of ourselves. The lion, we need the courage to practice, the courage to stay when it's not practice isn't going too good, or we feel distracted, or we feel we should do some other kind of practice instead, because it's when the practice is really on the wrong road. Or discriminating intelligence to stay on the path, to just stay with it, even though it seems confusing and sometimes sort of full of paradox, full of contradiction, just to stay with it. And the heart to be open and available, the Tin Woodman's heart to be open and available. But of course, they don't think they have those. They don't think they have those. The lion thinks he's cowardly. The scarecrow thinks he's dumb. The Tin Woodman doesn't think he has a heart. So we get peaked with self-doubt when we do this practice. We do it in life anyway, but especially in this practice. Plagued by self-doubt. We feel incompetent and incomplete because we aren't really very courageous. Sometimes we're heartless. Sometimes we make stupid mistakes. But those are all aspects of ourselves. And that's okay. We don't need to be judgmental. And we can hang together. We can hang together. So even though Dorothy and her friends are threatened by the Wicked Witch, as I said, they often feel happy and hopeful. Sometimes they feel alone and afraid, but the dark moments always pass. This is Frank Baum, the author. So we try to stay true to ourselves, even though we don't know what that is, on the path, and stay on the path. Even if it's rough, even if it's difficult. And if we do it with Sangha, good things will come. Sangha just means a little community, or a big community, or a community of two or three people. Could be a scarecrow, or a Tin Woodman, or a friend, or whoever. Good things will come if we stick together. Eventually, says Dorothy, if we walk far enough, we shall sometime come to some place. We shall sometime come to some place. We don't know. We don't know. But with hanging together, with a little bit of courage, a little bit of discriminating intelligence, a little bit of heart, we will come to some place. Some unknown place. So then as Dorothy and her friends proceed on their journey, they come to the poppy field. The poppy field. I don't know how many of you guys remember this. The poppy field. Frank Baum. These flowers together, their odor is so powerful that anyone who breathes it falls asleep. And if the sleeper is not carried away from the scent of the flowers, he sleeps on and on forever. So easily we get seduced by something that gives us some sense of relief from the confusion on this road, from the rawness on this road. You know, it could be drugs, it could be alcohol, it could be sex, it could be spiritual beliefs that we think are the one true way, or spiritual practices, ritual that we think are the one true way. It makes us high. We like to get high. But then we get seduced and we fall off the path of just trying to be open and available and return home. So we know that. We all fall into poppy fields sometimes. And you know, this makes me wonder if Frank Baum read Karl Marx. Because Marx said, Marx knew all about poppies. Religion is the opiate of the people. Religion is the opiate of people, said Karl Marx. And here's Karl Marx. He's referring to functions in society that were similar to the function of opium in a sick or injured person. Religion reduced people's immediate suffering and provided them with pleasant illusions, but it also reduced their energy and their willingness to confront the oppressive, heartless, and soulless. So Katagiri, the founding teacher here, used to talk about not being seduced by isms. Buddhism, Catholicism, psychologyism, Marxism, capitalism. Not being seduced, not being mesmerized, not being hypnotized by isms. Look at all of the fighting in the world for centuries. Mostly about isms, isn't it? Which ism is better? So that's the poppy field. The poppy field. So Dorothy, as the smallest in her party, is the one who falls victim first. And the lion, with all of his courage, says, if we leave her here, she will die. The smell of the flowers is killing us all. I myself can scarcely keep my eyes open, and the dog is asleep already. Run fast, said the scarecrow to the lion, and get out of this deadly flower bed as soon as you can. We will bring the little girl with us, but if you should fall asleep, you are too big to be carried. So the allegiance that the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion, the Scarecrow, the allegiance that they show to her, it's pretty wonderful, isn't it? Pretty wonderful. So when I've usually been most of my life practiced with people, but for 5 years I lived in northern Minnesota, and back in those days, in northern Minnesota, people did not practice meditation. Maybe they didn't here in Minneapolis either. They did in San Francisco, I'll tell you that. So I was all by myself, a year I kind of floundered around up there, not really practicing very much. But then I found one friend to practice with. And I'd sat with him every day for 3 or 4 years. And he was my Sangha. He was my Sangha. We all need someone. We all need someone. And to have this many people, or 210 people on something in our membership, or just two people. It's all the same. We need this. We need this. So then, these guys hang together, right? And then sooner or later, they enter the Emerald City. And in the Emerald City, each meets the wizard. And each meets the wizard who appears to them in a different form. Do you remember this? In a different form. So, I forget it, so I have to read it. To Dorothy, the wizard is a giant head. To the scarecrow, a beautiful woman. To the tin woodman, a ravenous beast. To the cowardly lion, a ball of fire. So, we've got Moses and Jesus and Muhammad and Brahma and Buddha, or if you're just a 12-step person, a higher power. You've got all these wizards to help us and support us. But the wizard tells them that they can't go home, that they can't get Dorothy home until they kill the Wicked Witch of the West. So they have to go off and kill the Wicked Witch of the West. So they go off and they are working to figure out how to defeat the Wicked Witch of the West and approaching her territory. In the process of defeating her, they have to face themselves. They have to face themselves. And here's Frank Baum again. Their journey was beset by danger because the powerful witch knew they were coming. She tried to destroy them. First she sent 40 wolves after them, howling and yipping and with their fangs bared. Then she sent a flock of crows that made the sky so dark that it seemed like it was midnight. Then she sent swarms of black bees after them. But each swarm was defeated. You know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of Buddha sitting under the Bodhi tree before he had his awakening and Mara coming after him. Mara, the demon, who was determined to rouse Buddha from his zafu, get him out of there. And the stories go on about how Mara sent first 40 people with swords who tried to pierce Buddha and threaten Buddha, and then 40 women who tried to seduce Buddha, and 40 this and 40 that. So, I don't know about Frank Baum. I don't know what he was reading or what he was smoking, or maybe he was sitting in Zazen. But Buddha just sits, and the army moves through and moves away, just like in the Wizard of Oz. Each swarm of bees just move through, because our heroes just hung together with their courage, with their open-heartedness, and with their discriminating intelligence. Finally, the witch sent the winged monkeys after the travelers. The sky was darkened and a low rumbling sound was heard in the air. There was a rushing of many things, of many wings, a great chattering and laughing, and the sun came out of the dark sky to show the wicked witch surrounded by a crowd of monkeys. You guys are much more receptive than Logan, my grandson. When I try to read him this kind of thing, he only wants Captain Underpants. But, you know, he's just 9, so. Anyway, the leader of the winged monkeys flew up to her, his long hairy arms stretched out and his ugly face grinning terribly. So, the monkeys, monkey mind, Any of you who said, you know about monkey mind. You know about how those monkeys sometimes are mischievous, but sometimes they're awful. They're beyond mischievous. They're just awful. You do your best just to be with them, just to not let them get you, just to see them, just to notice them, just to let them pass through. The long hairy arms stretched out on his ugly face, grinning terribly. Well, that's a bad zazen. That's a bad zazen. Oh, sometimes we have a bad zazen. So. But he saw the mark of the good witch's kiss upon her forehead and stopped short, motioning to the others not to touch her. We do not harm this little girl, the leader of the monkeys said, for she is protected by the power of good, and that is greater than the power of evil. So as I said, you have the opportunity to be kissed by your teacher and keep that kiss with you and be protected by that kiss. Be protected. That's not in your conscious mind. Not in your conscious mind. It's in your soul. Or your no soul, since we don't have souls in Buddhism. I don't care. So during this part of the journey, her friends manifest the qualities that they don't think they have. The lion is the courageous one. The Tin Woodman is the heartfelt one, who really extends his heart. The Scarecrow has discriminating intelligence. And Dorothy has to face death. So on our path, on our yellow brick road path, which sometimes seems like the wrong road, gradually we let go of self-doubt. Gradually we aren't second-guessing ourselves so much. Gradually we're not trying to get away from our inadequacies so much. We're just feeling them, just being with them. Not trying to cover them over or say we're bad because we have them. Gradually we're allowing our minds to function spontaneously in harmony with life. So then our brain, heart, and intelligence and courage flow easily and effortlessly, and death's no big deal. No big deal. So Dorothy finally confronts the witch and causes her to melt away by pouring water on her. Remember this? Pouring water on her. Water. So in the meditation process, gradually our hopes and fears melt away. And our hopes and fears are so tangled up together that we have to allow them both to melt away. Allow them both to melt away. It doesn't mean that it's the absence of hope. It means that we let go of all the monkey talk about hope and fear so that we can deeply resonate with who we are. So Dorothy and the others go back to see the wizard, right? Because now the wizard's gonna get her home. And they're her best buds, so they want her to go home. But what happens? Well, the wizard, they discover is not really a beautiful woman, a ravenous beast, a ball of fire, a giant head. He's a little guy. He's a little guy. So the community creates the guru. The community creates Jesus, Moses, Buddha, Bodhisattvas. That's fine. The community wants to create those. That's good. The community needs those. Those are archetypal figures that help us. That help us. But we need to be careful too, I think. Pretty careful. Pretty careful. Because that doesn't necessarily help us return to our home. Doesn't necessarily help too much. Asian Buddhism almost entirely is devotional. People think, oh, Christianity is devotional, I want to get away from that and just do Buddhism. Well, Zen is kind of odd in Asian Buddhism. Because if you go to Asia, and I've not been to Asia, but I know from... You find out that the devotion to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, to Maitreya Buddha, who is going to help you get born into the Western paradise, to Buddha in the Lotus Sutra, and you just chant the title of the Lotus Sutra, and it helps you get saved from all your illusions. It's very similar to the other major world religions. Zen is a little bit of an oddity, in that we say that the power's in here. And the archetypal stuff can help us, but we shouldn't get really believe in the archetypal stuff as some kind of real reality, because then we end up missing that it's in here. It's to help us be with what it is. So Katagiri is the founder of this Zen Center, and my first teacher was Suzuki, who was founder of the San Francisco Zen Center, and Katagiri was Suzuki's assistant in San Francisco, and then Katagiri came here to Minneapolis. So then Suzuki died, and then Katagiri went out there a few times to help them, and he was the head teacher there for a while, and then he came back here. And he said every time he went there, Suzuki's picture was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Finally, they had a huge statue of Suzuki. So there you go. But the key teaching in Zen is that there isn't any wizard, that all things are empty. And the Heart Sutra says, nothing is defiled, nothing is pure. But this emptiness is not Western emptiness, which is depressed emptiness. This is just the emptiness of stilling, letting your mind return to its still, untrammeled nature. So then Glinda the Good reappears, and she says to Dorothy, your silver shoes will carry you over the desert to your home. Then she tells Dorothy, if you had known their power, you could have gone back to your Aunt Anne the first day you came to this country. So then she returns to Kansas, and she discovers that Kansas and Oz are not two. That the phenomenal world and the enlightened world are not two. She wakes up, she sees the three farmhands, and she sees that they're no different from the Scarecrow, the Tin Woodman, and the Cowardly Lion. And what about this situation that she could have returned home from the moment she landed in Oz? It reminds me of a story about Bankei, Zen master who lived in the 18th century in Japan. Bankei, Zen master, sat every day in a cushion, and he sat and sat and sat, and he was determined to break through his monkey mind and not be caught by all of those delusions. So he sat more and more every day, and then he sat so long that he got blisters on his butt. And he kept sitting. And then, at some point, he let go of everything, all this stuff that he was churning through him, and he realized that he was already home. So then he, in his career as a teacher, he was only maybe 28, 30 when he happened to do this, then his career as a teacher, he told people, well, you don't have to do anything. The unborn is right here. He was somebody who said he was kind of like Eckhart Tolle. I've not read Eckhart Tolle. he preached to people all the time and said, "Oh, just return to the unborn. It's here. Don't get born." And he would have trainings with people where they'd have 1,000 people in the audience, and all he'd say is, "Well, you can practice, do some ritual if you want, or believe in some Buddhas if you want." But just return to your still nature, your unborn nature. You don't have to do anything else. And they say, well, what about sitting in meditation? You say, oh, sure, sit in meditation. But don't try to get somewhere by sitting in meditation. Where do you think you're going to get? You're unborn. So sit in meditation all you want. So he had no Dharma errors. And his lineage died out. But who cares? He was speaking authentically from his own way of being in the world. He said, only pay attention to one thing. Don't fall into identification as a me, as a Buddhist, as enlightened, as unenlightened, as young, as old, as retarded, as courageous, as stupid. That's all you need to do. And when a woman complained to Bankei and Hakuin. Bankei. When a woman complained that her gender was a karmic obstacle, because in Japan, gender was a big karmic obstacle, because sexism is rampant, and was for thousands of years. So this woman complained in front of all these people that her gender was a karmic obstacle. He retorted, from what time did you become a woman? You're unborn. That was his teaching. You're unborn. So what are some takeaways from this that I want to leave with you? I want to leave five takeaways with you. But if you take them away, you don't need to remember them. You can just let them pass through, and maybe they'll help you with your life. So number one, accept your friends for who they are. Accept your friends for who they are. A true friend will help you on your life's journey, quirks and all. And recognize that your friends need a little help too. Dorothy's friends needed a little help too. And you'll never know when you'll need your friends around and when a bunch of monkeys are coming through. When a bunch of monkeys are coming through, you need a friend. You need a friend to rescue you from the monkeys when they're all flying all over the place, you know what I mean? Disturbing your consciousness, disturbing your equanimity. You need a friend. We all need a friend. And number two, find a teacher who will kiss you. There are lots of teachers around. Find a teacher who will kiss you. When I was young, there was only like one teacher in San Francisco. But now, there are lots of teachers. Find someone who will kiss you. I'm not talking physical here. I'm talking about your soul. Or your no soul, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what it is. A person will have your back and help you find your deepest courage, your most discriminating intelligence, and your heartfelt connection with life and each other and yourself. Number three, follow your own yellow brick road, your own path, what you want to be, where you want to go, how you want to live. Find it. And sing and skip through your journey. A little singing and skipping never hurt. It never hurt. Number four, look within for your power. You have a great treasure. Right here, you have a great treasure. Right here. I say here, but I could say here, or here, or here, or here. It's right here. Number five, the last one, remember yourself that right now everything and everyone is unborn. You're resting on no thingness. You're resting on stillness right here. Even if you don't feel it, it's here. It's here. You're resting on it. And the thought of somewhere better keeps us from seeing that what we are seeking is what we already are. What we already are. Everything is as it is. Even if it appears confusing, upsetting, discouraging, depressing, still, just to be with it. Just to be with it. With some courage, with some discriminating intelligence. I know you don't have enough. They didn't have enough. But they did it anyway. And then they realized they always had enough. So finally, for a last quote from Frank Baum. Dorothy says, "Toto, we're home, home. And this is my room, and you're all here, and I'm not going to leave here ever, ever again, because I love you all. And oh, Auntie M, there's no place like home." So, here we are together. No place like home. No place like home.